Good morning. If you'll open your Bibles to the book of Isaiah, chapter 7. We're going to look at chapter 7 and part of chapter 8 this morning. There's a lot in there, and some of it seems a little confusing, but I hope we'll be able to keep it all sorted out, and there's a main theme that needs to be pointed out. We live in a world where there is a lot to worry about. I don't think there is ever a time when we hadn't lived in a world where there was a lot to worry about. We're tempted all of the time to worry about money. We're tempted to worry about jobs. We're tempted to worry about health. There are things that distress us. And during all of this time of stress, we tend to look for solutions to it. And a lot of times we look in the wrong places. We look for bankers. We look for politicians. We look for doctors. Not that we shouldn't make use of people who have all of these services. But what we really need to do is to understand that God is with us. What we really need to understand is there's one who we trust in who is with us who will carry us through to the end. We, of all people, Christians, ought to realize that God is with us, shouldn't we? And really the theme in Isaiah chapter 7 and going into chapter 8 is Emmanuel, God is with us. This is what God is trying to get through to Ahaz and the Israelites through Isaiah. He's saying, look, you have all sorts of problems, you have all sorts of pressures on you, and you're scared to death, but you have to remember that God is with you and hold on to your faith no matter what. If there's any a phrase in this passage in chapter 7, it would be in verse 9. In the last part of verse 9, the challenge is, if you will not believe, you shall surely not last. The idea is, if we're steadfast in our faith, we're going to be steadfast. And really, in the original, it has a little bit more of that kind of a ring to it. You will be steadfast if you're steadfast in your faith, if you understand that God is with us. And this is what God was trying to make the point to Ahaz when he preached through Isaiah with this. And that's what we need to take home with us today. To understand that God is with us and we need to be steadfast in our faith and look for the solutions that center around God. There's a lot of history involved in this, and I'll just try to paint an overall picture and give a general idea of what's going on. And we can understand why these folks were kind of worried. First of all, Isaiah had been preaching about all of the sins of Israel and how bad off they were. And we preached on that a couple of times previous Sundays. And the idea was that there was going to be punishment coming. There was going to be a cleansing coming. And that Israel was going to be chopped down like a tree was chopped down. And there were only going to be little shoots coming up. And even some of them weren't going to last. But a remnant would return. A remnant would be saved. There would be the faithful. Just like in the time of Noah, just like out of Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot was saved. God is going to save His faithful ones. And this is sort of along the line with our theme that he's speaking to Ahaz about. If you remain faithful, if you remain steadfast, you will be steadfast. You'll be part of that you'll be part of that group that remains. You'll be part of that group that survives. That was the same message it was in the book of Revelation, wasn't it? If you remain faithful unto death, what happens? You will receive the crown of life. If you remain steadfast, you have to remember that God is with us. God is with us. And that's the idea. Now, in the chapter, to understand it, I'm going to read big chunks of it. But I want to sort of give you a couple of pictures here. There are three time periods, lengths of time, that Isaiah mentions, okay? The time of this preaching, the time that this was written, or the time that this confrontation between Ahaz and Isaiah, was approximately 735 BC, give or take a year or two. And there were three time periods that were listed, and I'll do them in reverse order. In chapter 8, there's a time period where Isaiah talks about he's going to have a baby with his wife, and by the time that baby is old enough to say mama and papa, the kings that you have to worry about are not going to be there. It's like a two-year period. How long does it take a baby to learn how to say mom and papa? A couple years at the most? Maybe it's earlier than that. But in that time period, they're quaking in their boots. The people in Judah were quaking in their boots because the northern 10 tribes, the northern kingdom was attacking them. And the Syrians were attacking them. And not only that, but they had gathered together and formed an alliance to attack Judah together. And everybody was quaking in their boots. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And Ahaz, in his worldly wisdom, is thinking, okay, let's send a bribe over to Assyria and bribe them to attack. Or maybe we can go to Egypt and do that. And what Isaiah was saying, hey, just cool it. God is with you. You've got to trust. Okay? And so one of the time frames is this period of time where, you know, how long does it take to have a baby and the baby grow up just to the point where it says mama and papa? And the baby's name is swift as the booty, quick as the prey, Maher Shalal Hashbaz. How'd you like to have a kid named that? But it was a sign, it was a picture that the horde of Assyrians were coming in, and they were coming in fast. And it was going to provide relief quickly for the Israelites, for the Judeans, for Ahaz. And that happened. And then there's a second time period that's mentioned. It's the amount of time for a virgin, an unmarried woman, to get married to not be a virgin anymore, have a child, and that child grow up and be old enough to discern good or evil. This is a time period that Isaiah talks about, and we'll get at that too. And that's about, 11 to 12, 13 years, approximately. And it's about that much time that it took the Assyrians, and after they conquered Syria, they went down and wiped out the northern 10 tribes. They had put in other kings and client kings, but they were unfaithful. And they depopulated most of the area. And within that time period, at the end of that time period, there were so few people in Israel, in the northern tribes, that the farms became untended. The weeds grew up in the fields. And the land was only good for pasturing because there weren't enough people to keep the weeds out. I mean, I had trouble with my own garden. You have trouble with yours, I imagine. But, I mean, sometimes you just get too busy. You just have too much. And what happens when you have too much? Well, the part that you don't have enough time for, the woods grow back. The weeds grow back. And through Isaiah was saying, by the time it takes a baby to grow up and become old enough to tell good from evil, the kid's going to be eating curds and honey, because the people are going to be eating curds and honey because all we'll have is some cattle and some wild honey to eat. The farmlands are going to be desolated. And it happened. 722 BC, the Assyrians conquered the northern tribes and started to deport people. This is another prophecy that was fulfilled. And then the third time period was 65 years. And 65 years, in verse 8 of Isaiah 7, 65 years, Ephraim will be shattered so that it is no longer a people. Well, they were conquered in 12 years, but what happened? They were deported over a period of time. They became depopulated very quickly, but what Assyria did over a period of decades, over a period of different kings, was to move new people in, as well as removing the old people. And by the end of that 65 years, they weren't Israelites anymore. They were Samaritans. They were half pagans. They had some Jewish faiths mixed in, but they were a different people. They were no longer God's people. They were no longer Israel, identified as children of Israel. So these are the three prophecies that are going on and those three time periods that are going on. And the situation right at this point is Ahaz and his people are quaking in their boots. Let's go. Verse 1, Isaiah 7. It came about in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, the king of Judah, that Rezin, the king of Aram, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to wage war against it, but could not conquer it. When it was reported to the house of David, saying, "The Arameans have camped in Ephraim," his heart and the hearts of the people shook as the trees of the forest with the wind. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, "Go out now and meet Ahaz, you and your son, Shear-Jashub, and at the end of the conduit of the upper pool on the highway to the fuller's field, and say to him, 'Take care and be calm, have no fear, and do not be faint-hearted because of these two stubs of smoldering firebrands, on account of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram and the son of Remaliah. Because Aram and with Ephraim and the son of Remaliah has planned evil against you, saying, "Let us go up against Judah and terrorize it and make for ourselves a breach in its walls and set up the son of Tabeel as king in the midst of it. Thus says the Lord God, it shall not stand, nor shall it come to pass. For the head of Aram is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. Now within another 65 years, Ephraim will be shattered so that it is no longer a people. And the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is the son of Remaliah. If you will not believe, you surely shall not last." Okay, everybody's terrified. Everybody's quaking in their boots. It says they were like trees being shaken by the wind. You can just get that picture, you know. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? You know, how are we going to deal with all of this? And what does God say? "I got it covered. Calm down. You got to trust me." Isn't that the challenge that Isaiah was giving to Ahaz and the people of Israel? Yeah. If you don't believe, you're not going to last. But if you do believe, you don't have to worry. Who's in charge of the world? God is. We looked at chapter 6 last time, and we showed who's on the throne? The Almighty, Holy, all-powerful God of the universe. It doesn't matter what king dies and what king lives. It doesn't matter what army marches and what other army doesn't march. God's got it covered. And the secret for our being calm in this world is to understand there's a God in heaven who is with us. And this is exactly the point that Isaiah is trying to get across here. He's saying, look, these two guys are really, really mad at you. They're just like a bunch of torches that are about to go out. They can't sustain their fire. They're going out. The nations you are worried about are going out. So don't worry about them. It's the faithful remnant that would be saved. Isaiah's son was with him. Isaiah's son was named Shear-Jashub. Shear-Jashub. Yeah, Shear-Jashub, which has the idea of "as a remnant shall return." It was a prophecy about the fact that nations were going to come and they were going to suffer loss, but those who were faithful were going to be reborn. Those who were faithful were going to survive. Those who were faithful were going to be held in God's control. So The whole idea here is Ahaz and the rest of you, see to it that you're part of that remnant that returns. See to it that you're part of the faithful ones. Isn't that our challenge today too? To see to it that we persevere to the end. We're told in Revelation, he who is faithful unto death shall receive a crown of life. Endure to the end. The remnants will survive. Isaiah's son, Shear-Jashub, was a sign, and Isaiah's son's name was a sign. He was a walking example of the things that God had already said, a walking reminder of the things that God had said. So here the challenge is made to Ahaz, and Ahaz doesn't do so well. It doesn't say so here, but if you read in Kings and Chronicles, you find out he doesn't do so well. Excuse me. You find out that he doesn't do so well. He thrashes around and starts looking for political solutions and all this kind of stuff. And he isn't trusting in God that much. And he does what we do in this world and our politicians do in this world. We look for worldly solutions. We think if we bribe certain people, we twist certain people's arms, we get our way, and that'll all work out. And it doesn't always work out the way they want. And what Ahaz thought about doing was bribing the king of Assyria. Hey, take these guys off of my hands, okay? You fight with Syria, and take these guys off of my hands. Well, you can bribe somebody, but that doesn't always mean they're always going to do what you want. And it doesn't mean they're always going to be your friends. And we haven't learned that lesson for 2,000, 3,000 years. We can go in there and we can rearrange somebody else's government. We can pay them money. We can tell them to do this, that, or the other thing. But they're not always going to be our friends. And they're not always going to do what we want. And they're not always going to be the solution to our problems. Why? Because we have to realize that it's God with us that is the key to our success. It's not wise politics that's the key to our success, or wise statesmanship, or money, or bankers, or anything else in this world. It's God. And so here's the challenge to him and to us. And Ahaz really didn't take it too well. And so God sends Isaiah again very shortly afterwards to try to reassure him, get him to be more convinced. Verse 10. The Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, ask a sign for yourself from the Lord your God. Make it as deep as Sheol or as high as heaven. Isn't that great? I mean, you think about it. Here's an evil king who's practicing idolatry. And God's trying to calm him down and get him to trust in the one true God, to go back to the one true God. And he's saying, look, you're worried about all this stuff. You're not trusting in what I'm saying. Ask for a sign. It can be deep as the grave or as high as the heaven. Ask for any sign you want, and I'll show you that I mean what I'm going to say. Isn't that amazing? You think about that. If God came up to you through a prophet and said, ask for any miracle you want, as big or as little as you ask, as far out of reach as you can imagine, I'll do it. And that's the offer that God made to Ahaz. He wanted him to know that there was a God in heaven and that there was a God who was protecting his people. And what was Ahaz's response? Verse 12. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, nor will I test the Lord. He said, no thanks. No thanks, I don't need that. And apparently in the tone of voice, it was probably kind of snarky or something, because it was understood that this was a response of lack of faith rather than a pious, no, I don't want to put God to the challenge, I'll believe it anyway. That wasn't what Ahaz was saying. he was saying, oh, don't be ridiculous, that God of yours isn't going to do anything, is what he was implying by this response. And in verse 13, we know that this is the way the response was intended, because Isaiah answers. Then he said, listen now, O house of David, is it too slight a thing for you to try the patience of men, that you will try the patience of my God as well? Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin will be with child and bear a son, and she will call his name Emmanuel. He will eat curds and honey at the time he knows enough to refuse evil and choose good. For before the Lord will know enough to refuse evil and choose good, the land whose two kings you dread will be forsaken. The Lord will bring on you, on your people, and on your father's house such days as have never come since the day of Ephraim separated from Judah, the king of Assyria. In that day the Lord will whistle for the fly that is in the remotest part of the rivers of Egypt, and for the bee that is in the land of Assyria, and they will all come and settle on the steep ravines, on the ledges of the cliffs, on all the thorn bushes, and on all the watering places. In that day the Lord will shave with a razor hired from regions beyond the Euphrates, that is, with the king of Assyria, the head and the hair of the legs, and it will also remove the beard. Now in that day a man may keep alive a heifer and a pair of sheep, and because of the abundance of the milk produced, will eat curds. For everyone that is left within the land will eat curds and honey. And it will come about in that day that every place where there used to be 1,000 vines valued at 1,000 shekels of silver will become briars and thorns. People will come there with bows and arrows, because all the land will be briars and thorns. As for all the hills which used to be cultivated with the hoe, you will not go there for fear of briars and thorns, but they will become a place for pasturing oxen and for sheep to trample. This is what I was talking about before. Now you can see why I was justified in explaining it. Ahaz refuses a sign, and Isaiah says, I'll give you a sign. And this is where it gets confusing, because Isaiah said more than he knew. Ahaz heard more than he knew. To Ahaz, and probably to Isaiah, the signal was and the sign was the length of time it would take from an unmarried girl, a virgin, to have a baby and the baby grow up to age of accountability, about 12 or 13 years old. In that amount of time, all of those things would take place. The king of Assyria would come swarming in all over Israel. The place would become depopulated, a place of thorns, a place where cattle would grow, but not the kind of breadbasket agricultural area that it had been known for. And it did take place, and that was a sign that came true for Ahaz. But Isaiah said more than he knew. God said more than Ahaz knew. Because he didn't say, you know, a baby's going to be born, and when the baby born pretty soon, and when the baby gets to be this age, this will be happening. It said a virgin will conceive and give birth to a son. Now, everybody back then would have thought, okay, an unmarried virgin, a person, the word is Alma in the original language, and it has the idea of a young woman of marriageable age, a woman who just went beyond puberty, and she was in the age of having a marriage arranged. A virgin. And you'll hear modern scholars saying, well, it shouldn't be translated a virgin. I beg to differ. In fact, there were 70 Jewish scholars in 200 BC that also begged to differ, because they got together, this is before Jesus came, when they got together and translated the Hebrew Bible into Greek, they chose the word virgin to translate the word Alma. You see, what it does, what it really is an indictment to our own morality in our own country in our own age. When you talked about a girl being between the ages of 12 and 16, you were talking about a virgin. And it was understood. And so the Jewish people who translated this and said a virgin will conceive and give birth to a child, he's talking about a virgin. But he's talking about a virgin, a special virgin. He's talking about a special child. That child would be called Emmanuel, God with us. There's going to be a child, there was going to be a child that was God with us. And everybody would be scratching their heads wondering what in the world was going on. It was a prophecy about Jesus. It was a prophecy about the pregnancy of Mary, the virgin birth. Micah, who preached along the same time, would say something about a baby that was going to be born. The same baby. In Micah chapter 5, in verse 2, "But as for you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you one will go forth for me to be ruler in Israel. His goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. Therefore he will give them up until a time when she who is in labor has borne a child, and then the remainder of his brethren will return to the sons of Israel." Now, it goes on, but I'll stop there. That baby was going to be born in Bethlehem. That baby, the baby's goings forth were from all eternity. No wonder that baby's name would be Emmanuel, God with us. Matthew identifies the fulfillment of this prophecy. In Matthew chapter 1, 22 and 23. "Now all this took place to fulfill what was spoken through the Lord, by the Lord through the prophet, 'Behold, the virgin will be with child and shall bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel,' which translated means God with us." It was fulfilled in Jesus. And that's not strange, really. You think about it, a lot of the prophecies about the Messiah kind of sort of have a real-time application at the time the words were spoken, but it's not exactly, it doesn't exactly fit, and that's the case here. The way it's phrased makes it sound like they're talking about a special child that came in a special way, and that was true, literally, that was what he was talking about. But anybody listening to it at the time would say, oh, this is figurative speech, he's talking about there's some girl. We don't know. Maybe there was a famous marriage that was about to take place, and they were thinking about, you know, this princess or this person getting married. And by the time that girl got married and had a baby in the normal way, and this happened, that would be the son. Okay, that's the way they would understood it, and that was okay because it had to have meaning to Ahaz. Right? That length of time he's talking about. That was the sign to Ahaz. The prophecy to the Israelites was a special child was coming that was going to be born, the virgin. And that wasn't going to happen yet. But it was going to happen in Bethlehem, according to Micah. Other things like that happened. I'll just say that and then I'll draw it all together. Don't be surprised. David talks about his persecutions he underwent and how stressed he felt. My God, why have you forsaken me? I'm surrounded by the bulls of Bashan and by wild dogs. And they pierce my hands and my feet and people are gambling for my clothes. And David probably felt and meant every word that he was saying, but the Holy Spirit was speaking about somebody besides David, wasn't he? David's hands and feet were not pierced. Nobody gambled for David's garments. Now, David felt that way when he was being persecuted. He felt abandoned by God, and he was praying to God, and he was comforted by God through that expression, But all the while, David was speaking about somebody besides himself, wasn't he? It had meaning for David. It had meaning for all of the Jewish people who sang it all of those years. But it was also pointing to Jesus. And that's the same thing that was happening in verse 14 here. So, he's telling Ahaz, God's going to have an I told you so for you. And it's happening soon. The sign that God really means what he has to say is that within that time span, you're not going to have anything to worry about. And not only that, in chapter 8, he goes even closer to this. And he talks about, and I'll just paraphrase it because we're running out of time, but he talks about another child that he himself was going to have. He writes on this plaque, this big billboard, Maher Shalom Hashbaz, if I get the pronunciation right, which means swift is the booty, speedy is the prey. The Assyrians are coming fast. It's going to happen. And a big placard, okay? And then Isaiah goes into his wife and they get pregnant. And that baby is named Maher Shalom Hashbaz. And the prophecy is that by the time that baby can say Mama and Papa, the whole process is going to begin. And so what's the message to Ahaz and to the Israelites? God has it under control. God has it under control. 2 years pass, 3 years pass. All those people that they're worried about, they were shaking in their boots about, are gone. The Syrians have been captured. The Samaritans have a new king that was installed by the Assyrians, and they're not causing any trouble anymore. And it happened quickly. The Assyrians grabbed their booty, they grabbed their prey, and it took place in a couple of years. And then another decade goes by, and Israel is gutted out. And they're thorns, and they're depopulated. And God is saying, when it happened, isn't that an I told you so? Did it ever happen to you? You worry, and maybe your friends, maybe your brothers and sisters, maybe hear it from the pulpit. Now trust in God. Don't take matters into your own hands. Be patient. Be calm. God will take care of it. Just do what's right. Concentrate on just doing what's right. Concentrate on just being faithful through the challenge. And don't make any compromises about it. And God will see you through. Right? Have you ever had that kind of advice, but then not taken it? You know, you ever make shortcuts as far as choosing a job, shortcuts as far as choosing a mate, shortcuts as far as making other decisions in life? And you say, I got to have this and I got to have it now. What am I going to do? You know, I got to get Mom, I got to get married. And he's the only one around. I got to get him. And everybody's saying, no. No, look for somebody that God would be happy with. And he's, no, I can't get, you know. And you make your choice and you find out you're wrong. You do that with financial decisions. You do that with jobs. You do that with choosing friends. And God has this I told you so come. And God had I told you so's for Ahaz here in 2 years and then in 10 years. And then after that, the I told you so started to belong to other people. But it's the same with us. The challenge is the same with us. We have to remember God is with us. Jesus came. He dwelt among us. He's the eternal one who is with us now through the Holy Spirit. How much more should we have confidence that God is with us, Emmanuel? How much more should we hold fast to our faith so that we hold fast? And that's the whole point. Don't give God a cause for any more I told you so's. We've already given God enough of those. Okay? Hold fast to your convictions. Hold fast to your faith and firm it up even more. And we will be seen all the way through to the end. And we will survive. We will be the remnant that rejoices with the Lord in eternity. And that's our message. That was the message to Ahaz, and it's our message too. If you need the prayers of the saints, if you want to put the Lord on in baptism and respond in any way to God's message, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.
I hear.